Welcome to the Guadalajara Geopolitics podcast. Thank you for joining us. And here we have with us Callan Diggs, who is a career strategist and author of Reaching the Finish Line, a practical guide to discovering the champion in you. Callan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jorge.
And can you tell us a little about yourself, how you got started, and why you wrote the book?
Yeah, so since the Great Recession, I've helped over 2,000 people reach the finish line in their careers. Single moms, disabled people, high school dropouts, college dropouts, people in different backgrounds. And in order to help them reach the finish line in careers, people usually have two paths. So one path is a person, they want to kind of be their own boss. They don't want to work for anyone anymore. They want to be an entrepreneur. So usually in those cases, they're employed, but they won't make that transition to be an entrepreneur. In other cases, which is the second point, is there are people who want to be employees, but they want to find careers that align more with their passions. Sometimes they have certain qualifications, sometimes they have certain interests, and they want to find something that aligns more with that so they can feel happy and empowered in their careers. So since the Great Recession, I've been doing that, helping over 2,000 people, and eventually I got overwhelmed. So, you know, with requests for consultations and other types of help. So that's why I eventually wrote the book, Reaching the Finish Line, and it became an international bestseller.
And you were doing that in the U.S., or where
yes.
were you at the time?
Yes, I was doing that in the United States. At that time, I was in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So I was working with people. I was helping people. It was kind of funny, though, because I started at a very young age, and I kind of got ridiculed and laughed at a lot because people were saying, you know, why should I take advice from you and I'm old enough to be your father? Mm-hmm. So it was always it was amusing. But the thing about it was all about results. And at that time, I was getting people results. Now, of course, every person I was helping, they wasn't their careers wasn't doing, you know, 180s. But at the same time, you know, I was having between a 60 to 65% success rate, and especially at a very young age, I was I think that was pretty good, and I wanted to scale that, and I saw the opportunity, especially with the Great Recession, people lost their jobs, they lost their houses, they lost a lot of things, so I thought it would be a good opportunity to continue to make it work.
Now, I was going to ask you this at the end, but I guess since you brought it up, can you tell us maybe one war story, as I call it, an anecdote, a success story that comes to mind of a person that you helped, the situation that they were in, and what were some things that you did, or how they moved forward?
For sure. So there was one lady. Her name was Mireya. Well, she was from Mexico. She immigrated to the U.S. because she thought there would be some opportunities there, and she could, you know, I mean, which what a lot of Mexicans do have. They think going to the U.S. could provide them better opportunities. But at that time, she didn't have no luck. It wasn't like she was a man where she could just get a construction job or do a lot of those, you know, kind of, I guess, those type of jobs to be able to support themselves. And especially as females, it's kind of much harder, you know, when they migrate and trying to find work. So, but luckily, she was able to get a job at McDonald's, and she was working there. She had a daughter. It was her daughter. But with the cost of living and with the wages, she was barely getting by. So I reached out to her. Initially, I reached out to her in Spanish because prior to living in Ecuador several years ago, that's kind of what helped me to be able to communicate with her. Because her English was okay, but it wasn't completely fluent. But nonetheless, she wanted something better. So what I told her to do, I told her, well, you know, one thing that's very important is, since you don't have a lot of skills, well, you have to leverage your network. So I put her in touch with some people. She used LinkedIn, which a lot of people know about, like yourself and many other people know about. So I told her to spend 15 minutes a day on LinkedIn. 15 minutes a day, you know, joining LinkedIn groups, you know, resharing other people's content, make sure you have an updated profile, also get recommendations from people you have worked with in the past or people who could vouch for you. It was things like that that has really helped her. I mean, I've also, you know, kind of opened some doors for her and put her in some context that I had, but you know, she, you know, if you ask her, she could always tell you that it was really her that made the difference. And then eventually after a period of, I believe it was like five and a half, 6 months, she found a career with a small business. It was a small business that did a lot of like accounting work. They was willing to hire her, they was willing to give her a chance, and she went from making $8 an hour to $14 an hour. And again, that's probably not the hugest success story, Jorge. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, for her, it was really huge for her because she was so excited because she had enough money not only to take care of her daughter, but also to save money so she could start accruing more wealth.
And that's the point. I mean, these things should be gradual. No one should expect, you know, overnight $1 million success. And we just have to progress through life step by step, you know, as long as we have that trajectory. I'm not sure, perhaps you talk about it in your book, Reaching the Finish Line, but, you know, it should be steady progression, don't expect overnight for things to change.
For sure. And for a person like her who has no college degree, who has, you know, who dropped out of high school at 10th grade, for a person like that to go from 8 to 14, I mean, I think for her, and she recognized that, but that's a good success story for her. I mean, obviously for other people I've helped and, you know, they've had kind of maybe, I guess, bigger transformations regarding salary. But again, everyone's finish line is different. So the fact that she went from 8 to 14 and she can be able to not only take care of herself, but take care of her daughter, give them a nice living, and also allow her to save more money, well, that helped her to reach her finish line. And now she's doing great with that company.
And now let's look at some problems with education as it currently is. You listed some problems in your media kit, such as 30% of millennials living with their parents, the unofficial employment rate. I think you said it was 18, but I found it to be 23% at least in the U.S. The insane costs for university in the U.S. Over 50% of graduates saying they see a lower return on their investment than the generation 15 years ago, as well as we can talk about the tectonic shift, as I call it, in the global education system or paradigm. So perhaps maybe we can talk a little bit first about the problems. There's so many now millennials living with their parents, or at least here it says a third. And just to give a personal anecdote, you know, I know a number of people in Europe and the U.S. My age or in their 20s who are living with their parents. You know, it's not some crazy amount, but it's noticeably different from when I was younger. You know, the generation ahead of me, you saw them get jobs, move out, you know, start a family, develop to their full potential. And now I see a little bit less people doing that. So what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so when it comes to the millennials, again, a third of millennials are still living with their parents. And the problem with that is simply the system is broken. So a well-meaning person, they go to college, they think, hey, I'm going to study art history or I'm going to study these things. You know, and they think that they're going to graduate from college and get a great career and, you know, all will be well. Well, simply, that paradigm has been broken and people are starting to wake up to the reality. However, there are still a huge group of people that still haven't woken up to it yet. And still today, parents keep telling their kids to go to college because if you go to college, you're going to be successful. You're going to get a great job, get a great career, and yet you could buy a nice house and blah, blah, blah. Well, as we see, that's not working. You know, students are graduating from college. You know, they can't find a job for the major they went to school for, so they move back in with the parents. And then they end up working at Walmart or McDonald's, and they become this highly qualified person, you know, whether they have a bachelor's degree or master's degree in this particular field, but they can't find a job in that field. Mm-hmm. There was one great example Hannah Newberg. MSNBC did a story on her. And Hannah Newberg, she was a library science graduate from Vermont. So she got her library, she got a master's degree in library science from Vermont, and she wanted to be a librarian. So she looked everywhere in the U.S. to be a librarian. And the only luck she had was on the opposite side of the country to be a library assistant for $10 an hour. So she paid tens of thousands of dollars to get a master's degree. And the only luck she had was a library assistant position on the opposite side of the country. Now, obviously, she only tried that for a few months. It didn't work out for her. She said obviously that education helped because it got her the job, but she was severely overqualified for the position. You know, librarians make much more than $10 an hour. So eventually, just like most millennials, she moved back home to Vermont, and now she lives with her dad, working as a waitress. So that's a typical example of, you know, millennials getting stuck in that trap. One thing that's important is that millennials need to be strategic before they enter college. If they think college is a good fit, they need to be strategic. They need to say, okay, what am I interested in? Okay, now that the interest that I have, is it worth going to college for? Okay, is it affordable? All right, what's the demand of the economy? So if I graduate with this particular degree, am I going to have good prospects for jobs? Okay, do I need to move to Texas to find these jobs? Do I need to move to this state to find these jobs? But see, most millennials don't do that, Jorge. What they do is, again, they say, oh, I'm just going to go to college, get my degree, and then everything sorts itself out. And unfortunately, that's not the case. I foresee that it's going to continue to increase. Maybe by within the next 10 years, maybe even be 50% of millennials who are living with their parents if they don't start waking up.
Yeah, and I did the same thing as well. Unfortunately, you know, I started studying history because I really liked history, but I never surveyed the career opportunities that well. And I think you see a lot of people doing the same thing today. And, you know, if I had a child or if I went back again, I would look at it totally differently and say, you know, I'm lucky I have a good job, but that's not the case with most people. And I think another thing in the case that you gave where she flew out to the other side of the States to get that job, I mean, you can go even beyond that and look internationally. You know, you have good positions internationally. It's just people don't ever think to pick up and go across the world instead of across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of other countries that offer those positions. Absolutely. I think the problem with that is sometimes is that, you know, a lot of people tend to fall into the belief of the mainstream. Like, for example, let's look at Mexico, Jorge. So there are a lot of opportunities in Mexico, but a lot of Americans are scared to move to Mexico because they think it's the most dangerous country in the world. And, you know, that's not the case. And as well as I do. But yeah, you know, I think if more millennials do their due diligence and they do sufficient research, then they can avoid from becoming a student loan debt victim. And they also can avoid from being subjected to just a $10 an hour job, because Hannah Newberg, not only was she stuck to that, but she also had a lot of student loan debt. That's the worst position you could be in. Have a low paying job with a huge ton of student loan debt. That's the worst place you could be in.
And so I guess one of the reasons for that, for the third of millennials living with their parents, is now we move to the economy. So, you know, John Williams of Shadow Statistics says that we are at least 23% unemployment, as opposed to what the government says, you know, 10% or whatever, or less than that.
Actually, they're saying it's 5.6.
I mean, there you go. And so if you go back to 1929, you compare that to today, you know, in the Great Depression, in 29, the unemployment rate was between 25% and 35%. And so if today we're at least 23%, you know, we're now in depression territory. And so that's one reason people can't find good jobs when they get out of college. And so, you know, what can you say about the economic situation? And now it's much more difficult now to go the traditional route.
Absolutely. So there are alternatives, Jorge. Recently, I just interviewed a fine gentleman on my podcast. His name is Shai Reshef. And Shai Reshef is the founder and president of the first U.S. accredited tuition-free college in the U.S. And I call him a hero because he's definitely setting the trend. The school is called the University of the People. And so basically the format that they have is tuition is free, absolutely free. You pay no tuition. Only thing you have to pay is an exam fee. So every, you know, let's say you have a 3-credit course or 4-credit course, every course you take, you have an end of exam fee. So one exam for each course, and that's $100. Okay. So if you take that, if you take $100 and you times it by the amount of course for a bachelor's degree, that's $4,000 for a bachelor's degree, or for an associate's degree, that's $2,000. So you know, we talked about a lot more in that interview, but he's definitely setting the trend, and he was able to get a lot of volunteers from professors from NYU, a lot of other prestigious universities, to be able to create the sustainable model to provide affordable education for students, not only U.S. students, but students worldwide. Because if you compare that tuition price, okay, $2,000 for associate's degree, $4,000 for bachelor's degree, it's actually cheaper. Then it's actually cheaper than tuition and community colleges, because Florida now is starting to broaden their base by allowing people to get bachelor's degrees in those type of community college settings. But not only is it cheaper than community colleges, but it's actually more comparable to costs of attendance of universities in most developing countries. So I think he's doing a fine job with that, and I hope that other universities will start following that trend, because you have these for-profit universities. I'm not sure if you heard about the Carithian College, and where a lot of people got duped at that, and the state of California is trying to sue them so that those students won't still be obligated to pay that student loan debt. Basically, it was a college that went bankrupt. You have these other colleges like Miami-Dade College, and where they have these overcrowded classes. And by having overcrowded classes, so for example, Jorge, let's say that a student needs a particular course. So most traditional colleges fall into this paradigm in where, like, they'll offer a course that you need for your degree program for only one semester. But see, the problem is, if classes are overcrowded and a student can't get in, they have to wait a whole nother year just to get into that class in order for them to pass it so they can get their degree. So now the trend is it's taking even 6 years for most students to get a bachelor's degree, which is unbelievable. So the solution is, University of the People is one solution. Shai Reshef, he's really setting a trend, and I hope other universities follow suit. There's other options, like you have credit by examination. Mm-hmm. Okay, so credit by examination is a program, basically it's a collaboration of CLEP and DSST. It allows you to test out of courses. So instead of spending 4 months to take a certain course, you just take a test. And if you pass the test, you get 3 or 4 credits for that course, and each test is $80. And a person could basically do their whole bachelor's degree or master's degree program just basically testing out of courses. So those are two good solutions that people can use.
And from my experience, people kind of view that as something kind of cheap, I guess, if you just do the exams instead of going the 4-year route, going to classes, being with teachers and fellow students. But in my experience, looking back, I don't think it really matters, you know, because all that a lot of employers are looking for is that you have the certification, that you have a degree, and how you got it doesn't matter as much, as long as you have an accredited, right?
Yeah, exactly. Degree. And that's the important thing, because there are a lot of colleges in the U.S. that are tuition free, but they're not accredited. And that's what makes a distinction between a University of the People. They're the first U.S. accredited tuition free college. And they're not only open to the students of the U.S., but they're open to people all around the world. So if you're from Mexico or a person from another country, they want to apply and be able to get a U.S. degree from the United States, they can definitely do that. Like I said, very affordable, so affordable that a person shouldn't incur any student loan debt. But see, they even go one step further. Is if a person can't afford, let's say, $2,000 for a associate's degree or $4,000 for a bachelor's degree, they even have scholarships for students of financial need. So again, like he's the at least in my opinion, he's definitely a hero when it comes to transforming education and getting people to look at education differently and hopefully inspiring and influencing more people to adopt similar education models. But credit by examination, as we talked about earlier, Jorge, is absolutely a great solution because it's the same thing. You won't have to worry about incurring student loan debt. Now, see, the only difference between those two is probably with University of People, you're still going to go for 4 years, you know, but you'll pay $4,000, as opposed to for credit by examination, you can get your bachelor's degree in 1 year, which you may pay a little more. So you have to kind of, I guess, evaluate which means most to you, more time, more money, you know, stuff like that.
And I think I missed it. Is the University of the People, is that online?
Yes, absolutely. I'm sorry that I didn't state that earlier. It is an online university, so you do all your courses online. And basically, again, so now you're also learning from, like, seasoned professors. So, again, they have professors for NYU, Columbia, a lot of professors from these prestigious universities who volunteer their time to be professors for University of the People. So it's absolutely completely online. You can do it at your own convenience. And, yeah, I think it's a great option. And that's something along with credit by examination programs that I will always continue to advocate for students. That's if they're not looking for a specialized career. Now, if they want to be a doctor or if they want to get into like the healthcare system or be like an engineer, then maybe University of the People or credit by examinations, they don't usually offer those type of degrees. So you still might have to go to a traditional college to be able to get that type of degree.
That's something I wanted to talk about where, you know, I don't want to talk down university. You know, I work in a school and, you know, I'm not saying it's terrible, don't go to school, but for certain areas, you don't need degrees per se. I think I made a list. Like, for example, like you say, if you want to be a doctor, yes, you need to go to school. Let's see, I had here a list.
If you want to be a lawyer, right, you have to go to school. You don't have a choice. If you want to be a doctor or a lawyer, if you want to be an engineer, or if you want to be a scientist, you have to go to school. If a person is sick, no hospital is going to hire you if you don't have a doctor's degree in medicine. It's just not going to work. So there are majors that you have to go to school for. Like, you can't avoid that. But there are a lot of majors that people are unaware of that you do not have to go to school for. You don't have to go to school to be an IT professional. You know, if you want to be a computer science or programming or web design or whatever in that related field, you don't have to go to school to be that. Okay. When it comes to art, you don't have to go to school to be an art teacher. Okay. If you naturally have the skill or you can actually learn the skill and get better at it, that's not something that you have to go to school for. Now, of course, there are employers that are going to say, well, this is what we require. But see, the thing is, all employers don't require you to have a degree. So, again, that's kind of a misconception that people kind of fall into thinking that, oh, well, I can't get the job unless I have the degree. That's not the case at all. If you look at all employers, you will see that some employers really look at you based on your results, you know, rather than your academics.
As well as other areas, teaching a foreign language in many countries around the world, if you just know a foreign language, that's good enough. Business, you just start your own business, as well as construction. You know, people look down at construction, but I mean, certain areas of construction, obviously not like, let's say, an architect, perhaps, or certain types of engineers, but, you know, if you're painting or carpentry and a lot of that stuff, some of those guys make a lot of money, you know, $50,000, $100,000 or more a year. So,
yeah.
And you don't need a degree. You just need to know how to do it and have years of experience.
Absolutely. When it comes to the U.S., there's a lot of entry-level oil jobs that pay a lot of money. You look at places like Texas, look at places like North Dakota. North Dakota is so desperate that they are doubling their wages to find people to move in order to attract people to move there for these jobs. You know, so for example, North Dakota is kind of like they kind of have two different sectors when it comes to jobs. Okay, they have the energy sector, which is mostly oil, and then they have the other sectors, which is mostly like retail, stuff like that. Now, most places, if you work at McDonald's, okay, you know, let's say Houston, Los Angeles, New York, Atlanta, wherever. If you work at McDonald's, they're going to pay the minimum wage, okay, which is usually, you know, overall anywhere between $7 to maybe $8.50 an hour, depending on what state you're in, okay? Well, North Dakota is so desperate that they're paying people $15 an hour to work at McDonald's. It's unbelievable. If you want to work at Walmart, they'll pay you $20 an hour. You know, that's how desperate they are. So now, if you want to go into the opposite side, when it comes to the energy sector, especially oil, they'll pay you anywhere between $20 to $30 an hour. You don't have to have no high school diploma, no college degree. All you have to do is, you know, have the physical aptitude to be able to do the jobs. But that's how desperate they are to find people. So there are a lot of opportunities, especially in the U.S. Like I try to shy away from people's always saying like there's no opportunities in the U.S. There are, you know, it is harder, of course, because with the college system is broken, that definitely discourages a lot of people. But if people are strategic and they look closely, they can definitely find lucrative opportunities.
And it looks like North Dakota, then they beat was it Seattle in raising the minimum wage. I think Seattle is talking about raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour.
Interesting. Yeah. See, the thing about that, Jorge, is, and I saw that too, and Seattle, the $15 minimum wage, that's an actual law. Now, North Dakota's minimum wage, I believe, is $7 an hour range. They're not raising the minimum wage. It's the private sector that's just doubling their wages to be able to attract talent to be able to get those jobs. So, you know, when it comes to that, a lot of people always talk about, you know, the minimum wage is too low and stuff like that. Well, people have to recognize when a minimum wage becomes too high, it eventually starts to hurt small business. And then once you come to the point and where the employees are making more money than the business owner, that's the problem. And see, there's no point of having a business. What's the incentive for the small business owner to have a business if their employees are making more money than them?
Yeah. I just wanted to share an anecdote, I guess. When I was living in Europe, we were in Italy, in Rome, with some people. And we were hanging out with this up-and-coming Italian pop star. And we went to his friend's place in Rome, and I went to use the restroom there, and then we just laughed because at the time, you know, I was getting my master's, and we were just kind of joking, oh, it's not worth that much, you know, but we need the degree, right?
Yeah.
But we were joking because a lot of the stuff you learn, you know, I didn't really learn so much of the international relations or politics during my studies. I learned it on my own and with other people. You don't learn as much. There's a lot of misinformation or disinformation. And the point was, we went in the restroom, and this guy's friend had his college degree on the wall, framed, above the toilet. And it was his way of joking and saying, like, oh, it's really not worth that much. Because, you know, the unemployment rate in Italy and Europe right now is very, very bad. I believe in Greece, I just read, it was almost 50% youth unemployment rate in Greece. So, you know, half of the young people can't get jobs. So it was kind of a bit of a joke. Now let's look at real quick what I call the tectonic shift in the global education system. So for the longest time, you know, since the Middle Ages, you had a few teachers who had the knowledge, they had the time and the resources to study. You know, they didn't have to be out in the field working for their food. They were privileged enough to study, and then I guess the wealthier people would go to university and get their degrees. And then we had the Prussian model of education that came later, that basically wanted to teach people how to be good citizens. And we've had that model, I think, up until recently, the public school model. And that's not working anymore. And we can see there's a lot of competition now in education with the digital technology and decentralization of education. You have the online schools, like the school you mentioned, the University of the People, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So we have these MOOCs, as you call them, online schools. There's more smaller hands-on private universities. And, you know, as one of my professors said, you have Dr. Google. So Dr. Google has all the answers now, and teachers are no longer needed in the traditional sense. They have to reinvent themselves as curators and create new roles in order to provide value So, you know, why should a young person pay so much money, as you said, to listen to one person speak when they can find all that information online from Dr. Google? So what can you say about this gigantic shift now in education?
I think it helps because it opens a big industry or actually widens the industry of freelancers. So instead of a person going to college to study, let's say, you know, information technology, learn things like web design or coding, things like that, well, they can avoid that. They can avoid paying $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $70,000 for a bachelor's degree, and they can use of resources like lynda.com or Khan Academy or a lot of these other low-cost, affordable resources and learn the same skill, be just as competent as a person from a traditional college, but at the same time, they could finish earlier because they're cutting through all of the fluff, you know. Like, for example, when you go to traditional college, to make you take all these unnecessary courses, you know, you take courses that you're probably never going to use in the real world. Well, with Khan Academy, Lynda.com, and these other resources, you're studying specifically that field, you know. So if it's information technology or if it's web designs, that's what you're studying, okay? You don't have to take art as an elective. You don't have to take calculus. You don't have to take none of that stuff. You're specifically studying, you know, web design or coding or things like that. So I think that's what makes the difference. Another thing is you're not incurring student loan debt, okay? Llama is very affordable. I think, you know, with I think Lynda.com, you could pay a flat rate or you could have a subscription model, but it's very affordable. It's like $100, you know, $100, $200 as opposed to $10,000 or $20,000. So that's definitely a great option that people consider. So they won't incur any student loan debt, and they will also graduate much quicker. They'll finish the course much quicker. So they won't spend 4 years. They might spend 6 months. Then they can start putting themselves out in the field to be able to, you know, develop their business as a freelancer. So I think that economy, Jorge, is really booming. Kind of the freelancer economy. You know, people are having very successful businesses through YouTube. People are doing very well through website design or coding, or people are doing very well through animation. A lot of these different majors, they're not going to college for. They're simply, as you call it, Dr. Google, or they're using things like MOOCs or using other types of resources to be able to learn a trade at a much quicker time without incurring student loan debt.
And let's see, you talk about changing careers without going back to school. What can you say about that?
Yeah, so that kind of alludes to earlier when I talked about an example about Maida is LinkedIn is something I definitely recommend because what most people would tell you is, well, go back to school, you know, do another 4 years, do another 2 years to get a different degree. Well, that's pretty naive if you ask me because you're going to waste more time, you're going to waste more money, or you're going to be in debt afterwards, and you're probably just going to end up being agitated, you know, with all the stress that occurs from it. But by using LinkedIn, it allows you – so you know, a person could go to LinkedIn.com to see more for themselves, but if I could sum it up in 30 seconds is create an account, okay? You know, you have a professional picture. The people you've worked with in the past, connect with them. Have them to give you endorsements. It could be customer service. It could be business. It could be blogging or whatever, okay? And also, you can also detail the things that you're interested in, you know? So if a person wanted to connect with you or offer you an opportunity, well, you have those opportunities. With LinkedIn, you can apply for jobs. You can apply for certain professional groups. It's definitely a great way to develop yourself without going back to school. So if a person would dedicate themselves faithfully 15 minutes a day for a period of about 6 months, and with my previous clients, they can definitely be able to find another career that they're much happier in without going back to school and spending more time and money.
But let's say, what about the skills, though? Okay, you use LinkedIn, but they would require a new set of skills? How would you deal with that?
Well, yeah. Okay, that's a great question. Let's break that down. So now, I'm not saying that if a person were to use LinkedIn solely, they could get any job they want. Now, no, of course not. However, it can definitely increase your chances of getting a job that you want. So when it comes to skills, okay, you might not have those, let's say you want to go into the financial industry, okay, and you like certain maybe accounting skills or whatever, okay? Well, the fact that you have a network and the fact that people vouch for you, it provides the opportunity of those people being more likely to give you a chance of giving you the position, as opposed to you just applying for a job, you know, off a cold lead. You know, now if you apply a job cold, no one knows you, they're going to say, who is this person? They don't give you a chance, okay? But if you vouch for, okay, if you have recommendations, if you have endorsements all throughout your LinkedIn profile about how good you are, and if they can see that there are some skills you have that could be similarly related, and you might have to do maybe a continuing education course or you might have to use some additional on-the-job training, they may be willing to give you a shot of those jobs. As opposed to, like I said, most people when they apply cold, they don't get it because they don't know who they are. So the power of network really makes a difference.
Have you personally been successful with LinkedIn, or are there other people you know that have gotten jobs through LinkedIn?
Yeah. So I'll go to my clients first and I'll aim with myself. When it comes to my clients, that's one of the things that I recommend to them all the time. Now there are tuition free options, University People or Oklahoma's Promise, those type of programs where they need to go back to school, but they're probably going to spend 4 years, even though they're not paying anything, but they don't have enough time to do that. So I would advise them to do LinkedIn. And like I said, 15 minutes a day for a period of 6 months. If they do that consistently, they're going to start seeing some results. Being involved in LinkedIn groups, after actively connecting with people, connecting with other people's connections. Till to this day, she still only has a 10th grade high school education, but now she's making $14 an hour. So that's what I'm saying. It just kind of underlines of the power of a network. For my setup, Jorge, it's open lots of doors when it comes to partnerships, when it comes to joint ventures, when it comes to just media opportunities, just all across the board, it has really opened doors. So, I mean, whether you're an employee or you're an entrepreneur, LinkedIn can definitely be a great asset to you.
So, Kellen, you talk also about in your media kit and I guess in your book about bulletproof goal setting. What do you mean by that?
So yes, bulletproof goal setting is learning how to set more smart goals, strategic goals. So basically, it's setting yourself up to succeed rather than fail. So most people set goals on a pass or fail model. Okay, so they may say, "I want to lose 40 pounds." Okay, within 2 months. Okay, so if they do it, well, they're successful. If they don't do it, well, they fail. Well, see, the problem with that is most people fail. And a problem with that is most people continue to set those type of pass or fail types of goals. And eventually, when a person constantly fails over and over again, that discourages the person from setting goals in the future. So what I teach is to set goals based on a 3M metric. So 3M metric is 3 M's, okay? Minimum, moderate, maximum. So we can take an example like, Let's stay with the weight loss example. Okay, so for one person, a person may say, okay, I want to lose 30 pounds. Okay, so a person may say, well, my minimum goal is to lose 30 pounds in 3 months. My moderate goal is to lose 30 pounds in 2 months. My maximum goal is to lose 30 pounds in 1 month. Well, the thing is, all you have to do is achieve one metric and they succeed it. You know, so they have 3 metrics to succeed from, as opposed to 1 metric. So for that, so for the prior example we're talking about, a person won't lose 30 pounds in 2 months. Well, if they don't, well, they fail, and now they're hard on themselves, they're frustrated, and most people tend to do the same thing over and over again, which is why they think that goals don't work. But if they could set it basically on a 3M metric. Minimum, moderate, maximum. If they meet the minimum goal, well, they're successful. Or if they meet the moderate, they're successful. They just have to be one metric in order to be successful. They can apply that to their business life. They can apply it to their health life. They can apply that to time with their family. They can apply it to any aspect of their lives. But it allows them to set themselves up to win.
Okay, very interesting. I guess people will have to buy the book to read more about that. And coming here towards the end, what should people do to better prepare to navigate the economy and employment? So some things I put down where, you know, first figure out if you need to get a degree or not. You may not need to get a degree. If you do have to get a degree, see if you can find a cheaper institution, a quality institution, but one that offers it cheaper. You have online degrees. You have different certifications. You've mentioned lynda.com. Coursera offers certifications, but they're still not viewed, I guess, by the economy in general as something very accredited or very valuable, but that might change. A job experience without a degree, if the degree is unnecessary. Starting a business or looking to family or extended family that have businesses and starting to work with them and getting experience that way. Or just starting an internet business. You mentioned people on YouTube. I just the other day looked at Linus Tech Tips. I think it's this Canadian guy who started working at a computer retailer in Canada, and they had him start a YouTube channel, and then he made it his own independent channel, and that grew massively, and now he's got a few people working for him for his YouTube channel, which became a business. So what are some things perhaps that I missed, or perhaps you can mention some of these? What can people do to better navigate the economy, you know, this depression that we are in?
Well, first, you have to ask yourself one question, okay? Do I plan on staying in the city that I'm at, or do I plan on relocating? Okay, so you take a place like Yuma, Arizona. Okay, they have a 22% unemployment rate. Now, that's the official numbers. Okay, now the real numbers, who knows? It could be like 30 or 40%. But they have, I believe, a 22% unemployment rate. And the reason why, so for a person to live in a city like that, they have to ask, well, it doesn't make sense for me to stay here unless there's evidence of there's demand within a certain particular industry. So, for example, if there are a lot of teaching jobs in Yuma, Arizona, well, they may have manufacturing problems. They may have a lot of other industries that may be pulling the economy down. But if there are a lot of teaching jobs there and you want to be a teacher, well, that makes sense. You know, so one thing is to look at the demand within your city. That's if you plan on staying there. Okay, if you plan on relocating, well, look at where is the demand in other cities, you know, whether that's nationally or whether that's internationally. Okay, another question to ask yourself is, do I want to be an employee or do I want to be the employer? Okay, so you have multifaceted. You have an employee, you could be a solopreneur, which is essentially a freelancer. Or you can be the employer in which you build a business and you're able to hire people. You have to ask yourself, what part do you want to play in that? Because a lot of people tend to end up in a field that they prefer, but when it comes to the role, they're in the wrong role. You know, so for example, they may be excellent video editing skills, but they may have a different idea in mind how they want to create videos. Well, if you work for somebody that's you know, that doesn't appreciate your ideas, your creativity, well, that's gonna make you frustrated. That's gonna make you stressed. That's not gonna help you to be able to reach the finish line in your career. So I think demand is important when it comes to location, the demand. When it comes to the role you wanna play in regards to your career, if you wanna be an employee, if you wanna be a solopreneur / freelancer, or if you wanna be an actual business owner that hires people. Also, another thing is, I think one thing is important too, is to look at yourself personally. You know, so a lot of people always say, okay, just give me the secrets, or give me something I need to implement right now. Well, see, a lot of people, they tend to have mental baggage, and that tends to prevent them from reaching the finish line. So, for example, like you know, whether it could be a certain background you're coming from, or it could be a variety of different things. But I think the most important thing is, especially if a person is having problems in that field, which everyone does in some sort of way, is to be able to evaluate that. Okay, what are my weaknesses? Okay, what are my strengths? Okay, and obviously the way I see it, you want to give 2/3 of your time to your strengths, and you want to give 1/3 of your time to weaknesses. So that could be because sometimes a lot of people will say, well, I just want to focus on my weaknesses. Well, the problem is, if you focus on your weaknesses, you're not maintaining the competency of your strengths. It's like a basketball player. Mm-hmm. If a basketball player stops playing basketball, Jorge, you know, eventually a player's gonna get rusty, right? He's going to get rusty. He's not going to perform as well. Okay. Well, the same example. Okay. If a person constantly renewed his strengths, well, they're going to continue to be good at that. But they also should give attention to their weaknesses, you know. So if it's low self-esteem, if it's procrastination, if it's whatever it is, okay, they need to invest a certain amount of time to be able to develop that.
Okay. Good words of wisdom. And, well, pun intended, I guess, we've reached the finish line. let's see. Do you have any final closing thoughts, words of wisdom to the next generation, as I always ask?
Yeah. So I think the first thing is, before you want to desire to, before you have this big professional aspiration or want to change the world, but you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with those goals. There's nothing wrong with having those ideas or having that vision. Before you get there, You need to personally develop yourself. You need to work out the mental baggage that you have first, because that's going to impede your progress. It's going to impede your growth to be able to reach the finish line. Like, for example, if a person always have a scarcity mentality, if a person always thinks that people are going to take advantage of them by offering value. So like with me, I'm always willing to offer value to people. You know, so for example, there are certain people that ask me, I'm a fan of yours. I'm a fan of other types of radio shows and YouTube channels and things like that. But there's people that ask me, you know, could I come on their podcast or could I come on their or whatever channel to talk to them? Now, obviously, there's only about so much time in a day. But at the same time, I do believe in giving value. You know, if I see that person, if I don't know that channel or radio station or whatever, but if I see that the person has a following and has an opportunity to give value, I would try to reserve some time to give value. So it's also, when it comes to books, I give away hundreds of my books away for free. You know, I've given it to various nonprofits, charities, and things like that, because it's not always about you, but more importantly, it's about how you can provide value to your society. Because once you provide value, that's when that value comes back to you. You know, if you're not going to provide value, then people are not going to pay for your services. If you have a business, if you don't provide value, people are not going to pay for your products or services. You know, that's why you have to learn. That's why people have to learn to be able to give value first, you know, have a more abundance mentality. And then by giving value, that value will come back to them. And that, you know, that's the whole mutual reciprocation. So, I think that really goes a long way. Before a person can really, just tell me the secrets, I don't care about everything else, I feel like those people, they would never be successful. They would never be successful because there's always some type of quirk in the machine that will always impede their growth. You know, if a person has self-esteem issues, well, that's going to impede their growth. If a person has a scarcity mentality issue, well, that's going to impede their growth. If a person has a procrastination issue, well, that's going to really impede their growth. But every person has a different problem, you know. But I think what's important is to mean that you do have the problem and taking some time to invest to be able to, again, to be able to eliminate your weaknesses and have more strengths. But 2/3 time you focus on your strengths and the other third you focus on your weaknesses. That'd be my recommendation.
Callan, thanks for joining the Guadalajara Geopolitics podcast. I hope you can join us in the future to talk about education and more news and current trends.
Great. And if I could just leave my website with your viewers, you go to www.reachingthefinishline.com or reachingthefinishline.com. You can access the podcast there, where I have the interview with the president of University of the People, as well as I have a free newsletter that offers a lot of informational tips to people who want to be successful employee executives or make the transition to be an entrepreneur, and they can get that at reachingthefinishline.com.
And I did listen to Shay's
Shai's
the podcast you did with him last night. Uh-huh. And you do have a lot of interesting guests. You talk a lot about, I guess, education, right?
Yes. Yes, specifically, I had Dale Stevens. For people who don't know who Dale Stevens is, he is one of millennial under 30 leaders and four leaders in education. He are rated by Forbes magazine, which is a very award-winning popular business magazine. Shai Reshef, you talked about Bethany Marshall, UFC, Ultimate Fighter, UFC athlete. Peter Sage, the Europe, they call it Europe's extreme entrepreneur, also the founder of Space Energy, which his goal is to be able to kind of have a bunch of solar panels in space so energy could be accessible to everyone and it could be much more affordable. His goal is to make it free. But yeah, I don't want to, go on a tirade about my podcast, but I have a lot of interesting guests there. And yeah, it's worth checking out.